Book 1, Growing Up. Chapter 1, My Street. I am 10 years old, and I know every crack, bone, and crevice in the crumbling sidewalk running up and down Randolph Street, my street. Here on passing afternoons, I am Hannibal crossing the Alps, GIs locked in vicious mountain combat and countless cowboy heroes traversing the rocky trails of the Sierra Nevada. With my belly to the stone, alongside the tiny anthills that pop up volcanically, where dirt and concrete meet, my world sprawls on into infinity. Or at least to Peter McDermott's house on the corner of Lincoln and Randolph, one block up. On these streets, I've been rolled in my baby carriage, learned to walk, been taught by my grandfather to ride a bike, and fought and run from some of my first fights. I learned the depth and comfort of real friendships, felt my early sexual stirrings, and on the evenings before air conditioning, watched the porches fill with neighbors seeking conversation and respite from the summer heat. Here in epic gutterball tournaments, I slammed the first of 100 pinky rubber balls into my sidewalk's finely shaped curb. I climbed upon piles of dirty snow swept high by midnight plows, walking corner to corner, the Edmund Hillary of New Jersey. My sister and I regularly stood like sideshow gawkers, peering into the huge wooden doors of our corner church, witnessing an eternal parade of baptisms, weddings, and funerals. I followed my handsome, raggedly elegant grandfather as he tottered precariously around the block, left arm paralyzed against his chest, getting his exercise after a debilitating stroke he never came back from. In our front yard, only feet from our porch, stands the grandest tree in town, a towering copper beech. Its province over our home is such that one bolt of well-placed lightning and we'd all be dead as snails, crushed beneath God's little finger. On nights when thunder rolls and lightning turns our family bedroom cobalt blue, I watch its arms move and come to life in the wind and white flashes as I lie awake, worrying about my friend, the monster outside. On sunny days, its roots are a fort for my soldiers, a corral for my horses, and my second home. I hold the honor of being the first on our block to climb into its upper reaches. Here I find my escape from all below. I wander for hours amongst its branches, the sound of my buddies' muted voices drifting up from the sidewalk below as they try to track my progress. Beneath its slumbering arms, on slow summer nights, we sit, my pals and I, the cavalry at dusk, waiting for the evening bells of the ice cream man in bed. I hear my grandmother's voice calling me in, the last sound of the long day. I step up onto our front porch, our windows glowing in the summer twilight. I let the heavy front door open and then close behind me, and for an hour or so, in front of the kerosene stove, with my grandfather in his big chair, we watch the small black and white television screen light up the room, throwing its specters upon the walls and ceiling. Then I drift to sleep, tucked inside the greatest and saddest sanctuary I have ever known, my grandparents' house. I live here with my sister, Virginia, 1 year younger, my parents, Adele and Douglas Springsteen, my grandparents, Fred and Alice, and my dog, Saddle. We live literally in the bosom of the Catholic Church, with the priest's rectory, the nun's convent, the St. Rose of Lima Church and Grammar School, all just a football's toss away across the field of wild grass. Though he towers above us, here God is surrounded by man, crazy men to be exact. My family has 5 houses branching out in an L shape, anchored on the corner by the red brick church. We are 4 houses of old school Irish, the people who have raised me, McNicholas's, O'Hagan's, Farrell's, and across the street, one lonely outpost of Italians who peppered my upbringing. These are the Sorrentinos and the Zarillis, hailing from Sorrento, Italy, via Brooklyn, via Ellis Island. Here dwell my mother's mother, Adelina Rosa Zarilli, my mother's older sister Dora, Dora's husband Warren, an Irishman, of course, and their daughter, my older cousin Margaret. Margaret and my cousin Frank are championship jitterbug dancers, winning contests and trophies up and down the Jersey Shore. Though not unfriendly, the clans do not often cross the street to socialize with one another. The house I live in, with my grandparents, is owned by my great-grandmother, Nana McNicholas, my grandmother's mother, alive and kicking just up the street. I've been told our town's first church service and first funeral were held in our living room. We live here beneath the lingering eyes of my father's older sister, my Aunt Virginia, dead at 5, killed by a truck while riding her tricycle past the corner gas station. Her portrait hovers, breathing a ghostly air into the room and shining her ill-fated destiny over our family gatherings. Hers is a sepia-toned, formal portrait of a little girl in an old-fashioned child's white linen dress. Her seemingly benign gaze, in the light of events, now communicates, "Watch out. The world is a dangerous and unforgiving place that will knock your ass off your tricycle and into the dead black unknown, and only these poor misguided and unfortunate souls will miss you." Her mother, my grandma, heard that message loud and clear. She spent 2 years in bed after her daughter's death and sent my father, neglected with rickets, off to the outskirts of town to live with other relatives while she recovered. Time passed. My father quit school at 16, working as a floor boy in the Carrigusian rug mill, a clanging factory of looms and deafening machinery that stretched across both sides of Center Street in a part of town called Texas. At 18, he went to war, sailing on the Queen Mary out of New York City. He served as a truck driver at the Battle of the Bulge, saw what little of the world he was going to see, and returned home. He played pool very well for money. He met and fell in love with my mother, promising that if she'd marry him, he'd get a real job. Red flag. He worked with his cousin, David Dim Cashin, on the line at the Ford Motor Plant in Edison, and I came along. For my grandmother, I was the firstborn child of her only son and the first baby in the house since the death of her daughter. My birth returned to her a life of purpose. She seized on me with a vengeance. Her mission became my ultimate protection from the world within and without. Sadly, her blind, single-minded devotion would lead to hard feelings with my father and enormous family confusion. It would drag all of us down. When it rains, the moisture in the humid air blankets our town with the smell of damp coffee grounds wafting in from the Nescafe factory at the town's eastern edge. I don't like coffee, but I like that smell. It's comforting. It unites the town in a common sensory experience. It's good industry, like the roaring rug mill that fills our ears, brings work, and signals our town's vitality. There is a place here. You can hear it, smell it, where people make lives, suffer pain, enjoy small pleasures, play baseball, die, make love, have kids, drink themselves drunk on spring nights, and do their best to hold off the demons that seek to destroy us, our homes, our families, our town. Here we live in the shadow of the steeple, where the holy rubber meets the road, all crookedly blessed in God's mercy, in the heart-stopping, pants-dropping, race-riot-creating, oddball-hating, soul-shaking, love- and fear-making, heartbreaking town of Freehold, New Jersey. Let the service begin.